The New York Times quotes a Dr. Chad Hansen of the John Muir Project on this topic, and we reached out to him to answer a couple of basic questions you and I may have. Dr. Hansen, it's John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So that's my description of it. How do you describe the fire and what you've seen so far?
Well, I think your description is right on the money with regard to the incredibly severe impact on the town of Paradise. The majority of the homes in that town were burned down, and the level of devastation is really hard for a lot of people to comprehend. Obviously, dozens of lives were lost. And, you know, for me, this just underscores what myself and a lot of other scientists have been saying about this issue, which is that we need to fundamentally shift our thinking from this outdated 20th century notion that we should be suppressing fires in remote backcountry areas and doing these logging projects in deep in the forest, far from homes, and that somehow that's going to protect communities. Because what the science is telling us, and what this horrific example of what happened in the campfire in Paradise is telling us, is that we have to focus our attention and our resources on protecting homes from wildland fire. And we know we can do that well. What the research is telling us is that if we apply fire safe principles to houses and help people do that, and help people do what we call defensible space within 100 feet of homes, just basically pruning small trees and lower limbs on mature trees, removing most of the shrubs and grasses. If we do that, then over 90% of homes will survive wildland fires, even big, intense ones. And in many cases where this has really been done effectively, over 99% of homes are surviving fires. We just saw that, for example, in the Latuna fire last year in Los Angeles County. And so we know we can do this effectively, but when the president of the United States says this is a forest management issue, and what we need to do, supposedly, is roll back environmental laws and basically raid our national forests and other forest lands and open them up to even more intensive logging from the logging industry, that is going to make things a lot worse, because it's not only going to damage habitat, but it's going to destroy a lot of communities because it diverts attention and resources away from where it could be focused, which is protecting homes.
But the president wasn't specific when he lobbed those two tweets out there saying, shame on them, we should withhold funds, they're not doing a good job with forestry management. And I wondered if, in fact, he wasn't suggesting what you first said, that we need to prune trees and shrub away from homes 100 feet. Maybe that's not forestry management, but if we did that, you think that this sort of desolation that we're seeing wouldn't be happening, right?
That's right. We're not going to get to 100% home protection. I'm not sure it's possible, but we are seeing examples in big, intense fires where we're seeing over 99% of the homes survive fires.
Yeah.
Real examples in recent fires in California and elsewhere. So we know we can do this. Now, the reason I say that the president was talking about doing intensive logging out in the forest and not, pruning lower limbs and small trees next to houses is because this is the second time that he's made a comment like this. And also his interior secretary, Zinke, made a comment along these lines as well, basically pushing this mid-20th century notion about logging deep in the forest and somehow that's going to stop fire. Now, here's the great irony of this, bitter irony, actually, is that my colleagues and I did the most comprehensive analysis ever conducted on this issue. And what we found is that forests with the fewest environmental protections and the most logging actually burn the most intensely. So everything the president is proposing is actually going to not only damage forests and increase fire intensity, but it's going to basically put homes and lives at more risk. And in fact, what we saw in the town of Paradise, in the campfire, that fire blew through an area that had been intensively logged on both public and private lands for years before this fire occurred.
Hmm.
And it went through that area so fast that people didn't have time to evacuate.
Are these kinds of fires inevitable because of climate change? Or, I don't know, are these topics related?
They are related. Climate change is certainly a factor. Rising temperatures from climate change, drought cycles. We've always had droughts, but they can be made worse by climate change. Certainly rising temperatures have a role to play. And all those things can increase fire behavior. But what's important to understand is that we need to have totally separate conversations about the impacts of wildland fire on communities, which is always a catastrophe whenever a life is lost or a home is burned, versus what fire is doing out in wildlands, in forests and oak woodlands. And there it's a completely different outcome, because the reality is that study after study, my own research and many of my colleagues, what we're finding is that we actually have less fire now in our forests than we did historically. And there's really no debate about that scientifically. So, you know, it's not a disaster when fire occurs in the forest, but it's always a disaster if fire affects a town and if lives are lost.
I get your point on that. I was in Colorado visiting my brother and family the other day, just a few weeks ago, in fact, and we went for a hike through the woods in the Rockies there. They have a cabin up northwest of Denver. Anyway, as I was walking through this forest for the first time, I've been in that kind of environment, and maybe it was somewhat similar to what they have in California. I was amazed at how much dead wood there is everywhere. Old trees, some of them dry, some of them not so, but just amazed at how much brush and trees there were in the forest. I always thought of forests as a bunch of trees living and standing, but over, you know, years and years and years, I guess some of them fall. And I thought about the, and as you go through these cabins in these neighborhoods, you'll see piles and piles or stacks of logs and sticks and woods that people have collected. But it just seems to be like fighting the tide. I wondered, how can you ever, if a fire came through here, these people are toast. You know what I mean?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, this is one of the things I love about my field. It's kind of like opposite world. So many of the things we're learning are counterintuitive. At least they seem so at first. And one of those things is that, first of all, when you have patches of trees that are killed either by drought and these native beetle species called bark beetles, or by patches of fire where it burns more intensely. Those areas of dead trees are actually an incredibly important habitat type. We call it snag forest habitat. And it turns out that many different wildlife species have evolved to depend on dead trees. Many different insect species have evolved to depend on dead trees. And a lot of the wildlife species eat those insects. Woodpeckers create nest cavities in the dead trees because they're softer than live trees. And so dozens of species of birds and small mammals depend on those dead trees. In a way, it's kind of the cornerstone of the whole forest ecosystem. So what we're learning is that a forest is not just live trees. A forest ecosystem, to be healthy ecologically, has to have a lot of dead trees and down logs. One of the other things that we're learning, and there's a bunch of research on this, is that areas with a lot of dead trees in the forest do not burn more intensely than forests with few or no dead trees. You would think that that doesn't make any sense at all, because it seems like, well, if you have dead, dry wood, it's going to burn more intensely. But the way I explain it to people is it's like a campfire. If you've ever built a campfire, you know you don't put a big log on the fire and stick a match to it and expect it to burn. It's not going to happen. You put kindling on, dry leaves and needles and little twigs, and eventually the fire gets going. You put something bigger on. Well, you know, a dead tree in the forest is just the same. You know, pretty quickly after that tree dies, those dead needles fall on the ground and they decay into soil, and the small twigs fall and decay, and it's kind of like a big log just standing in the forest. There's actually not that much to carry the flames.
So the advice, I'll let you go on this. This is very helpful, Doctor, but it would be stop worrying about the forest, if you will, that is those logging solutions, and just more focus the attention on where the homes themselves are. And if you cleared away the kindling, if you will, by even 100 feet, you think much of this disaster would not take place.
That's absolutely right, and that's what the evidence shows in study after study. And the other thing that's important about this, and the reason why we have to focus on homes, is that the majority of the fires where homes are being lost and lives are being lost are not even in forests. They're in grasslands and chaparral, you know, shrub habitat. They're in oak woodlands.
Well, but listen to this. 269 just texted in, and they said, but how will pruning trees and shrubs help when 70-mile-an-hour winds are blowing these burning embers onto your house roof? So I believe that speaks to just exactly what you were getting at. The winds are going to carry the flame anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Here's an example. Last fall, a house my wife and I own in a place called Cago Canyon, adjacent to the Angeles National Forest in Southern California, a fire came through called the Creeks Fire, and it was driven by 65-mile-an-hour winds, very, very low humidity, high temperatures, you know, the most extreme fire weather you can imagine.
Yeah.
That fire, in that community, everyone takes defensible space really seriously. Everybody takes fire safe principles on the home very, very seriously. There's a few exceptions, but not many. And, you know, in Los Angeles County, these things are actually enforced annually. People come around, they inspect, they make sure you do your defensible space work. If you don't do it, they'll do it for you and bill you. That's the way it works. It's not a question. It's something that happens. That fire came through the community, and 95% of the houses survived, including our house. It was driven by winds just like that, 65, sometimes over 70 miles an hour, wind gusts. Extreme fire weather, and that was the result. So we know we can do this effectively, because the fact is that when you're talking about a really narrow zone right around the houses, you can actually maintain that every single year. You can remove the pine needles and the leaves from the forest floor, rake them up, and the twigs. You can prune lower branches and small trees and shrubs. You can mow and cut grasses and haul that away. And, you know, if you do that and you make sure you've got a fire-resistant roof and you don't have, you know, exterior vents that allow embers to get sucked in, you know, you have those right. ember-proof vents on the house, then your house is going to survive almost every single time. And, you know, it's something we just need to think about and pay attention to those examples because, frankly, you know, homes and lives hang in the balance.
Dr. Chad Hansen from the John Muir Project. Fascinating. And, boy, that answered the question I had. And for some of our listeners, too, I may call you again as these fires continue to burn, Doctor. But thanks for your help today.
Thank you. My pleasure.